women with mismatched circadian rhythms, so exposed to too much blue light, will have more susceptibility of having children with more sort of learning difficulties and ADHD. And we've seen a huge spike of ADHD in the last 20 years in diagnoses. And typically, when you look at it from a circadian rhythm standpoint, it's probably because the mothers were exposed to too much blue light during that sort of incubation period.
You're listening to the Untaming podcast.
Rewild the child.
Here is your host, Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily, and this is the Untaming podcast. And here we are at the new ice moon here in the Southern Hemisphere. I hope the episodes you've heard so far this season have resonated with you. I know I liked hearing what Alma Gottlieb had to say about parenting practices amongst the Bing people in Cote d'Ivoire in the last episode. Please don't hesitate to get in contact if you would like to suggest a guest or have any specific questions relating to a rewilding topic that I may be able to find answers for you in future interviews. And if you've been listening to the 10 questions in 10 minutes episodes and mulling over what your own answers would be, toying with the idea of getting in touch to share them, then please do. I'd love to hear from you. The last 10 questions in 10 minutes episode came from my very own little sister who lives in Australia and is a new mum. The next episode, which will be airing on the 24th of July to coincide with the full ice moon, will be the first part of another interview that our guest host Mary Francell recorded. It's a long one, hence why I'm splitting it into two parts, with Kemi J. Goldhammer and Kimberly Moore-Celeste on Indigenous breastfeeding. You know, I've recorded over 40 interviews for this podcast, and so I was beyond mortified when 15 minutes into my interview with Andy Mant, I discovered that my Skype call recorder hadn't started automatically like it always has in the past. So as much as I absolutely loved this interview on natural and artificial light exposure, I really wish I'd had that extra 15 minutes to ask him to go a little deeper into a few things. As it is, I think we still covered a decent amount. Let me know what you think. Thirty-six-year-old Andy Mant was born in and grew up in Dorset and currently lives in Perth, Australia with his wife Katie. Andy is the founder and CEO of Blue Blocks, a company specialising in evidence-based advanced light filtering eyewear. He is the inventor of Blue Blocks blue light blocking glasses and Remedy sleep mask. Andy's passion is researching and educating to help make the science behind light management understandable to all. Last night he had a solid 8 hours of sleep, and for breakfast this morning he had oats and protein. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So about 5 to 8 years ago, my husband and I spent 3 years living in Europe in an old 80s van, and something we accidentally stumbled upon through living and travelling without electricity was the natural shift of our circadian rhythms to coincide with sunset. So in the middle of winter, we'd be heading to bed around 8 or 9 p.m. and then at the height of summer, our bedtime would naturally shift to around midnight. So we've occasionally stayed in houses since then, and it has become a real irritator for both of us to be in houses lit up with artificial lighting. And having now read through the resources on your website and listened to a lot of other interviews you've done, I know there is so much that you have learned that I want to hear about. So perhaps to start with, you could enlighten us, sorry that was an awful pun, but about the light colour spectrum, you know, specifically understanding the differences between blue light and red light.
Yeah, no problem. And, you know, there's two different types of light. There's natural from sunlight, and there's artificial from LED light sources. And natural light contains all different colours of light, blue, green, yellow, amber, red, for instance. Think of, you know, a rainbow when you see that in the sky. That's all the colours that are emitted from the sun. Now, we also have artificial light, which comes from LED sources, and that's only high in one color, and that's blue light. Now, the difference between the two is that blue light is a stimulator of cortisol, which means that it keeps us awake, which is great for during the day, but not great for when you're watching your TV or on your smartphone after sunset. It triggers a message, you see blue light, to your circadian rhythm that you mentioned earlier, which tells the body that it's daytime. So you're going to struggle to sleep or get good quality sleep if you expose yourself to blue light after sunset. That's why you slept so well when you were traveling around and you were devoid of blue light after sunset. Red light's very different. Red light is a healing property of light. It's a healing color. So it restores any of the damage caused by blue or any other damaging frequencies of light during the day, such as UV, and it keeps us very healthy at a cellular level, and it also is very good for after sunset because it doesn't interfere with sleep.
Right, and so the names blue light and red light, they actually are in reference to the colour of the light?
Absolutely, yeah, they are in reference to the colour.
Mm-hmm. And how are things like red LED lights, are they effective at all by using them at night to replace blue light?
Yeah, it's context has got to be applied to these things. Like that, it is better than blue light because it doesn't interfere with sleep. So having red light bulbs in your house after dark will kind of simulate what our ancestors would have seen, which would have been they would have been sat around a campfire. They would have only been exposed to red light, orange light, from that source. So having those light bulbs installed at the correct angle as well is worth noting. So they need to be from the ground up, so from lamps, not from above, because light angle can impact us negatively. But red light doesn't, from the academic literature, what it's shown is it doesn't interfere with melatonin, and melatonin is our sleep hormone. Where we've got to be careful with LED lights of any color is that most of them run through an alternating current, which increases something called flicker. And when light flickers at an invisible flicker, this is, your brain can detect that, and it can lead to issues like photosensitive epilepsy. It can lead to migraines, unnecessary fatigue, eye strain, etc. And also, if it's running through the same current, an alternating current, you need to be aware that dirty electric and electromagnetic frequencies, non-native EMFs, will also be emitted, which is bad at a cellular and mitochondrial level. For instance, we at Blue Blocks have red light bulbs that that are LEDs, but we put a circuit transformer within the bulb that changes the AC current to a DC current, so you get no flicker and no EMF. So it really depends on the type of red light bulb you use.
So how is that flicker different to like the flicker of a fire?
Sorry, the flicker of a fire?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the rate at which the flicker happens. So a fire will flicker, but it's very visible. See it flickering. If you look at an LED light source, you won't be able to see it flickering. Whereas if you record it in slow-mo, you will see that flicker rate when you play the video back to yourself on your iPhone will actually be happening at an invisible rate. Now, it's the speed at which that flicker happens, which then causes the brain problems in transcribing the message via light into your brain, which causes the problem at a neurological level. When a fire is flickering, you can see it, and your brain has plenty of time to decode that message because it's not flickering at a very fast rate.
Right. So now, can you help us to understand UVA and UVB and their implications?
Yeah, so there's three types of UV, UVA, UVB and UVC. UVA and UVB are the important ones, and the difference between the two really is the intensity of the packages of light, invisible light, that are in those two invisible frequencies. UVB is great for the synthesis of vitamin D via its reaction with cholesterol that's found in the body. So cholesterol is very important for that reason. Vitamin D is fantastic. It's great for reducing all-cause mortality. COVID-19 patients, those that have had severe infection and died have had very low vitamin D levels, and those that really aren't experiencing any symptoms typically have very high vitamin D levels, and papers have been released on that. And also we've seen papers released that UV actually kills the virus as well, which is very interesting. UV is great for that purpose. It's also great for building up melanin, which is like a tan when it's hot outside. And what you find is when you have more melanin in your skin, that acts as a filtration system for the prevention of overexposure to more UV light. Because if you overexpose yourself to UV light, you're going to cause damage to your cells. I'm not in the camp of UV is fantastic and, you know, it's completely safe. I think that I'm in a middle ground that if we expose ourselves to too much of it, we can cause damage to the cells. And in the environment we're living in at the moment, which is devoid of red light and infrared light, because we typically come home after a day out in the sun and put on the TV or go on our smartphone, our skin then doesn't have a chance to repair any of the damage caused by UV light, which can then lead to like aging, skin cancers, melanomas, etc. So you've got to be very careful not to really blame UV for causing those types of issues. It's more of a case of we're now putting ourselves in this alien environment after sunset, where naturally from an ancestral point of view, we wouldn't have been exposed to frequencies of blue light after sunset. And blue light is an active form of light that causes our bodies and cells to be active and protective during the day. Whereas after dark, we would have been exposed to red light, which would have restored any of the damage caused by cells from exercise, metabolic processes, UV light, anything else really that caused damage during the day on the human body was restored by red light in the evening. And now we're devoid of it and only live under blue light. So our bodies just continue to think it's daytime and can't repair.
So how are these UV rays affected by things like sunscreen, sunglasses, and windows?
Yeah, those things are barriers that you've mentioned. So they're barriers to allow natural light to hit our skin or our eyes. If you throw sunglasses in there as well, they allow the blockage of certain frequencies of light. So when you start interfering with natural light, you're in effect creating a form of junk light. It's alien light that isn't natural to us as humans, and it won't allow for the proper function of hormones within our body. So for instance, if you wear sunglasses outside during periods of high UV, I'm not for or against sunglasses. I think you should wear sunglasses when there's a lot of glare around, because it's man-made and it's very damaging to your eyes. So if you're around big buildings or if you're driving, you should be wearing sunglasses. But if you're out sunbathing and you're wearing sunglasses, you're not going to be releasing enough cortisol, and you want to release a lot more cortisol during the day when you're out in the sun in UV, because cortisol is an antagonist to UV light. So it counteracts any of the negative effects that happens to your cells from too much UV light exposure. So you really need to have higher levels of cortisol when you're sunbathing and when you're covering up your eyes and with sunglasses. When you're doing that, you're going to probably have you're more likely to suffer from sunburn. Now, sunscreen is sort of a double-edged sword. You know, it's full of chemicals for a start, which you're putting on the largest organ in your body, your skin, and the absorption of those chemicals can change you, sort of at a DNA level, cellular level. But also, again, you're filtering out some of the frequencies of light from the sun, which naturally our bodies will crave. So, you know, you may put sunscreen on and protect yourself, quote unquote, from ultraviolet light, but you're not getting any ultraviolet light into your skin to synthesize vitamin D. So yes, you might get a bit of a tan and build up melanin wearing sunscreen, but you're not going to synthesize any vitamin D. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you want high levels of vitamin D if you want to have a strong immune system and, you know, ward off any viral diseases and things like that. So, you know, you've just got to be careful not to mess around with light too much from its natural source, because you've seen what's happened when we've messed around with it from an LED standpoint, where no one can sleep anymore. People are wired all the time. And, you know, we can see from this massive outbreak of a coronavirus that people's immune systems can't handle, you know, really a very mediocre virus. And a lot of that comes from lack of sleep and very low vitamin D levels because we're scared of the sun.
Hmm. Now, I vaguely heard something about a study that had to do with blue light on the back of the knees and the skin's own circadian rhythm. What's all that about?
Yeah, so it was found about 2 years ago that the blue light receptor melanopsin, which we previously thought was only present in the eyes, was actually found to be present in the skin. And the study that you're referring to was where they basically shone a blue light on the back of someone's knees and wanted to see the effect that had on melatonin secretion. And they found that by having blue light on your skin, your melatonin secretion actually lowered. So it showed that melanopsin's present in the skin, which means that we can sense that there's blue light present in our environment, even if our eyes are closed or we're blind. It means that the opsins are present in order to detect that light and can send messages to our circadian rhythms, our clock systems, even if our eyes are covered. So the bearing of that on circadian rhythms from an artificial light standpoint is that if we're wearing a good quality pair of blue light blocking glasses after sunset, the red lenses, we might only be getting, say, 90% secretion of melatonin, because if our skin is then exposed to the light from your TV or your house lights or your fridge lights, your phone, that could then be sensing the blue light and sending messages as well to the clock system saying, well, actually, it's daytime. We don't need to secrete as much melatonin. So you're going to get this, you know, effect where you might think by wearing blue light blocking glasses you're going to get the optimal sleep or optimal melatonin secretion. You'll be improving it by wearing them, but if your skin is still covered, is uncovered, and you've got blue light in your house, then you're going to have problems with optimal melatonin secretion. So that's why it's always good after sunset to have red lights in your house as well.
So is this why some people would find it difficult to sleep if there's just a tiny light in the room, like a laptop charger or something like that?
100%, yeah, because you're not going to be allowing melatonin to secrete correctly. And if you're not wearing a good quality sleep mask, your closed eyes will still register the fact that blue light is present. And, you know, it's not even just junk light that's inside your room. Like if you've not got blackout curtains, for instance, and a car or has its headlights or a street lamp is outside or a neighbor's lights, that's still ambient blue light that's passing through your curtains and impacting you by hitting your skin or your closed eyes.
Right. Now, how is the circadian rhythm affected by natural timing shifts like changing seasons, different temperature patterns, length of day, and then more extreme changes like traveling across different time zones?
Yeah, I mean, seasonally it changes because a circadian rhythm runs on a 24-hour cycle. You know, it comes from a Latin word, two words, circa, which means about, and diem, which means a day. And our circadian rhythms reset every day. So you reset your circadian rhythm with the rising sun. So the sun rises, you know, it gets, you know, later and later, then earlier and earlier as the earth revolves around the sun. So as the seasons change, as long as we're watching the sunrise every day, your sleep and wake cycles will slowly change in relation to the rising and falling sun. So this is what I did a YouTube video on it not so long ago, saying that 8 hours of sleep is a real nonsense thing. It's like saying women should eat 2,000 calories, men should eat 2,500 calories. It makes no sense. We're all different. You know, when you look at 8 hours of sleep being nonsense, well, it It kind of is, because in the winter we need to sleep for longer. And the reason we need to sleep for longer is we need to preserve, from an ancestral standpoint, we need to preserve calories, because the food wouldn't have been in abundance in those months. So it's darker. You'll probably be in bed at 4 p.m., waking up at like 7, 8 a.m. So you're getting huge amounts of sleep. To conserve calories and to keep us surviving through the winter. Just look at some of the other animals out there. They hibernate through those months to preserve and conserve calories. In the summer, and spring months when it starts to get lighter, we can get by on less sleep. And we can get by on less sleep because we need to be awake longer. We need to be eating more food. There's more food in abundance. So we need to be storing up ready for those colder months. And also, there's a lot of UV light present in the summer months. And UV light actually synthesizes in the eyes with DHA, which is typically found in seafood, and it's in large abundance quantities in the eye, creating a DC electric current, which gives you the same anti-inflammatory effects that grounding does, or cold thermogenesis, for instance. So, you know, the ultraviolet light creating that DC electric current through the body will ward off a lot of inflammation. So we don't need as much sleep for the growth and repair of any cells during the summer months. And when you look at travel, I mean, air travel is a very unnatural thing, and it's not a healthy thing to do because of the amount of radiation we're exposed to, and amount of blue light while we're flying. But if you fly through time zones, you'll feel jet lagged, and you feel jet lagged because your body clock is still in the same time zone that you left from in a completely different lighting environment. So when it comes to circadian rhythms, it takes a day for every time zone you've flown through to actually fully recover. So if you've flown through five time zones, it's going to take you 5 days to fully sync your circadian rhythm. But you can do it a lot quicker if you employ some hacks, which is basically, as soon as you, when you're flying, try and land in your destination time zone in the evening so you can go straight to bed within a couple of hours. When the first morning after you've landed, you want to go and watch the sunrise to entrain that circadian rhythm quicker. But it's just not natural to move so quickly across so many time zones. So our body clocks take a few days to catch up. But you can resync them fairly quickly by, you know, watching the sunrise, because the sunrise is an entrainer of our circadian rhythms.
Just thinking about what you were saying about the changing of seasons, that would be why my kids would sleep about 12 to 13 hours in winter, but only about 10 to 11 hours in summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, spot on.
So now, something I've heard of, which sounds truly astonishing, is how mothers pass on circadian rhythms to their children.
Its context needs to be applied. A baby's not born with a circadian rhythm.
Right.
It takes 3 to 6 months to develop one. But if a pregnant lady carrying their child has a disrupted circadian rhythm, that can have an impact on the child at a hormonal level rather than a circadian level. So typically you find that women with mismatched circadian rhythms, so exposed to too much blue light, will have more susceptibility of having children with more sort of learning difficulties and ADHD. And we've seen a huge spike of ADHD in the last 20 years in diagnoses. And typically, when you look at it from a circadian rhythm standpoint, it's probably because the mothers were exposed to too much blue light during that sort of incubation period. So in terms of children developing circadian rhythms, there's two ways which they do it. The first way is through the light and dark cycle. So, you know, if you're getting up in the middle of the night to feed your baby and you're putting on a standard LED light, that's really going to stand in the way of a healthy circadian rhythm being developed in your child, because you're showing it blue light, which it shouldn't be seeing at the wrong time of the day. You should probably be outside when you're watching the sunrise in the morning with your baby to allow the baby's circadian rhythm to learn and develop based on natural light cycles rather than artificial light cycles. But the second way a baby's circadian rhythm develops is through mother's breast milk. It's through something called chrononutrition. And this was shown last year in a study that when breast milk was pumped from mothers that just had a baby, they found that breast milk pumped during daylight hours was very high in cortisol, which is a hormone that keeps us feeling awake. It's what's stimulated by blue light. And breast milk that was pumped after sunset was very high in melatonin and tryptophan, two hormones that basically induce sleep. So when you're, say, a mother's pumping breast milk and they only pump it during the day, you're basically giving your baby during a night feed a massive shot of cortisol, which is going to say to it, it's the middle of the day, I'm wired, I'm awake. It's almost like giving the baby a triple espresso. You know, it's just a shot, three shots of coffee in the middle of the night. It's not going to want to go back to sleep. So you just need to be, mothers need to be aware that, you know, in order to entrain your baby's circadian rhythm correctly, light dark cycles are extremely important. So install red light in the baby's room. So when you're doing a night feed, you're not disrupting theirs or your circadian rhythm. But also when you're pumping breast milk, make sure you label the time of day you pump it, because when you're doing a night feed, you want to be feeding the baby breast milk that was pumped after sunset. So you're giving the baby sleep hormones in the milk, like melatonin and tryptophan, and you're not giving the baby the milk that was pumped during the day, because it's very high in cortisol, which is going to, you know, disrupt the developing circadian rhythm, but also give you more sleepless nights because the baby will struggle to get back to sleep quickly.
Mm. Do you have any more to share with us regarding breast milk and the influence of light?
No, that's probably it, really.
Yeah. Okay. So taking supplemental melatonin to aid in sleep seems quite popular at the moment. Can you share? Can you tell us about melatonin and the natural hormone compared to the dietary supplement?
Yeah, it's something people shouldn't do. I'll say that straight out. Supplementing on a hormone is hormone replacement. You don't want to be doing that unless you've got a problem secreting melatonin. The problem is, right, is people can't sleep and they're getting their melatonin levels tested and they're low. And the doctor is then going, well, you need melatonin. So they give them melatonin supplements, but you can produce as much melatonin as you want by wearing blue light blocking glasses that block 100% of light between 400 and 550 nanometers. So you don't need to take a pill. You just literally need to put on a pair of good quality red lens blue light blocking glasses after the sunset through to when you want to go to bed, and your melatonin levels from day one will be through the roof and you'll sleep well. The issue you've got when you supplement on a hormone like steroids, I guess testosterone, melatonin, is your body will become dependent on the exogenous source, and then the endogenous production of that hormone will suffer in the long term. So you'll become reliant on pills for the rest of your life. There was also an interesting study on supplementing melatonin in rats, and a lot of studies in rats relate to, I guess, impacts that could potentially happen in the human population as well. And they showed that when they allowed rats to supplement on melatonin, after a long period of time, their retina started to thin, which is not good, something I don't really want happening to me. And also when you look at how melatonin is produced by the mixing of two neurotransmitters, okay? And the two neurotransmitters are tryptophan and serotonin in the gut. And when they mix, they form melatonin under a very specific light environment. If there's blue light present, they won't produce melatonin, okay? They'll produce maybe a little bit of it, but not enough to really have good quality sleep. You need the absence of blue light for those two neurotransmitters to mix to create that melatonin, which is going to help us sleep. So when we're supplementing on melatonin, I guarantee you every single person that's supplementing on melatonin is taking it under blue light. They're taking it with their house lights on, watching TV, fridge light open, with their phone or whatever it is near them. So you're taking a hormone that can't be produced in that environment that you're taking it in. Yes, there haven't been studies done on that yet because big pharma probably don't want that kind of information to come out, but I would not be taking a hormone that cannot be produced under the light conditions that you're taking it under, because you're asking for severe trouble later on in life.
Hmm. Now, I remember hearing a while ago that as humans, we eat sunlight, and my thoughts were, well, this is a bit too meta for me. But now I see it from the perspective of eating foods that receive natural light. Can you elaborate on this notion?
Yeah, it comes from two sort of aspects. One is the seasonality of food. You know, you should only be eating food that within your environment that you're living in at the moment can be grown naturally. So if you're eating, you know, like a tomato in the middle of the winter, for instance, that is not going to be the best thing for your metabolism and your GI tract, because it ancestrally isn't ready or shouldn't be ingesting that type of food at that time of the year. And it can lead to complications metabolically. And Dr. Jack Cruse has mentioned that, you know, on a podcast in Queensland, that, you know, you shouldn't be eating a watermelon in the middle of winter because it can actually lead to weight gain. Whereas if you eat it in the summer, it's completely fine. So the seasonality of food needs to come into play. So what can be grown in your environment at that time of the year? And then during winter, you need to shift over to, you know, in the summer months, you can eat more, you know, carbohydrate, for instance, because plants can grow more during those months. Whereas in the winter months, from an ancestral standpoint, before the agricultural revolution, this is, you would have eaten more of a, say, ketogenic diet. You would have eaten more fish, meats, you know, fats, things that you'd be able to hunt during those times. But during those summer months, you would eat more carbohydrate. And you also got to look at it from another standpoint as well, which is that when you have a human, for instance, that is well in tune with their circadian rhythm, lives outside loads, understands how light works, they look extremely healthy. They're getting the right nutrients, the right hormones, everything in their body. When you look at someone that's sort of just been living under artificial light all their lives, they look old and, you know, they get ill and sick easy. You know, again, as we've seen with COVID, that's the majority of the population gets sick because they're not healthy. They don't have a strong immune system because they're indoors all the time and not exposed to the correct frequencies of light. The same is true for plants and animals. So if we've got a chicken that's living outside and is free to roam and eat what it wants to eat, getting natural light, eating food that has been exposed to the correct frequencies of light, that chicken is going to have a much stronger nutrient profile in line with what it would have been ancestrally. And when we eat that chicken, we're going to get a huge amount of benefit from the nutrients, as opposed to eating a chicken that's been farmed in a barn somewhere under artificial grow lights. They're typically smaller, they don't have as much nutrients, and, you know, typically, you know, farmers are cutting tumors and shit like that out of them before they're bagging them up and selling them in the supermarkets. The same is true for plants as well, like, you know, organic vegetables. You know, it's not just the pesticide things, it's the fact that, you know, has that strawberry or that tomato been grown outside, and it's that tomato plant is receiving the correct light from the sun that all its ancestors would have received, and it can produce the right level of nutrients and be the right kind of, you know, taste for what it is. And the problem is we've moved so far away from what food should be like, because everything now is just artificially grown under, you know, unseasonal and artificial light. That, you know, typically if we eat an organic tomato as opposed to an artificially grown one, like, you know, we tell the difference massively straight away. So I guess that's really it from a light perspective when it comes to food.
And like, I think of like in the supermarket, so even if you've bought organic food that's been grown outside, but then you've got the supermarket lights, is that affecting it?
It's a good question. No one's asked me that before. No, I wouldn't say it would have done, because it's already been killed or harvested. So it's grown under, you know, its natural light source, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, the blue light might accelerate the, you know, the decay of the nutrients within those foods.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, not something that I've actually been asked before, but yeah, I don't think it would have a huge bearing because it's already dead.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know, is there any correlation between infertility and light exposure?
There is, yeah. It's a big subject. Not a huge amount has been done on it, but there are some really interesting studies that are out there. Polycystic ovary syndrome is a big issue in female, and it turns out that people with that condition, polycystic ovary syndrome, typically have very low levels of melatonin. So a lot of the treatment plan for such a condition is supplementing on melatonin. You know, melatonin is not just a sleep hormone, it's a very powerful antioxidant. So it's found in a lot of junctions where there's a lot of cell turnover. So in the ovaries of females and placenta, for instance, there's a lot of cellular turnover. So melatonin is very high in those regions. So, you know, if you have, you know, evenings where you're exposing yourself to blue light every night, you're not going to produce a lot of melatonin in those reproductive organs. And it's that melatonin that repairs any of the cellular damage that is caused down there. So you need high levels of melatonin. So you need to be covering your skin, wearing blue light blocking glasses in order to boost the melatonin production, which then yields off nasty diseases like polycystic ovary conditions like polycystic ovary syndrome. And, you know, Jack Cruise as well has shown that, you know, studies of women that are bathing themselves under blue light in the evening, you know, unknowingly just by having house lights on, watching the TV, are leaving themselves more susceptible to breast cancers as well. That's actually increases that sound quite substantially. But, you know, even from a conception standpoint as well, being able to conceive comes down to the light you're under as well. Like testosterone levels in men is governed by the time they go to bed. There was a study that showed that men that went to bed after midnight had 50% lower sperm count and testosterone levels than men that went to bed before 11 p.m. For instance. So the timing of when you go to sleep actually has a bearing on how much you know, sex hormone you're producing and how much, you know, how healthy your sperm count is. And, you know, men that go to bed very late also have very high levels of ASA, so anti-sperm antibodies, which means that their sperm counts are going to be lower than when you compare it to men that went to bed before 10 p.m., for instance, in this particular study. So it has a huge bearing on not just reproductive health, the light that you're under, but also, you know, the, you know, certain cancers, conception rates, and also menstrual cycles as well. It was a huge nurses study that looked at all aspects of night shift workers, and they found that, you know, 100% of women that were working night shifts had irregular menstrual cycles, which was fascinating. It wasn't just like 9 out of 10, it was everyone had irregular menstrual cycles, which shows that disrupting your circadian rhythm by working at night when you should be resting is having a huge detrimental effect on monthly rhythms in women as well. So, you know, it's a light story that's directly tied to melatonin. And, you know, melatonin is so important for reproductive health that if you're exposing yourself to too much blue light when you shouldn't be, AKA after sunset, you're going to have very low levels of melatonin, which is going to have problems on infertility and conception rates.
Now, just briefly, do you know what sort of role things like alcohol and caffeine play in all of this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been sort of amiss of me to say that light is the only in influencer in sleep, because there are other things that play as well. And you know, light is probably the most fundamental aspect, but caffeine is an interesting one. Because it creates something. So in the brain, right, during the day, you have two ways that you can go to sleep, okay? You can have something called circadian rhythm sleep, okay? So the light during the day keeps you awake, and the correct light after dark, aka red light, and no blue light, helps you go to sleep. But you also have something called sleep pressure. During the day, we run metabolic processes through electron chain transport. And the byproduct of that is ATP, so adenosine triphosphate. And that's, in layman's terms, that's the energy that keeps us moving and running our metabolic processes. But as that turns over, we produce something called adenosine. And that's a byproduct of being alive. And it's stored up in the brain during the day. And when you build up certain amounts of adenosine, you'll feel tired and want to go to sleep. So for instance, if you go and run a marathon, you'll build up so much adenosine that probably after that marathon, you're going to sleep so well that evening. Whereas if you're sitting around, you know, on your ass watching TV all day, you're probably going to struggle to go to sleep at the correct time because you're not building up enough sleep pressure. We need to be active as humans. Now, there's a receptor in the brain called the adenosine receptor. And what caffeine does is it blocks that receptor. So when we feel tired, we have a glass of a cup of coffee or tea, for instance, or a caffeinated drink, Red Bull or Coke or something like that. That caffeine stops the receptors from telling us that we've got too much adenosine in our brain, we need to go to sleep. So you're blocking that receptor, which keeps you awake. It's not natural to do. So what happens is that if you take a caffeinated drink before you go to bed, you're going to basically block the signaling, which is telling your brain that you're tired and you need to go to sleep to clear out that adenosine, because you want to clear out that adenosine to be able to avoid Alzheimer's and memory issues later in life. But by drinking coffee, you're basically pushing out and, you know, sort of suppressing that that natural mechanism to make us sleep. And it depends as well on whether you're a fast or a slow metabolizer of caffeine. I'm a pretty slow metabolizer, so it takes me about 8 hours after I've drunk caffeine to clear that out of my system. So if I have a caffeinated drink — I don't, by the way, I drink Swiss water extracted decaffeinated beverages — I would not restore myself back to my adenosine receptors back to optimal functionality until 8 hours after that coffee. So if I have one at 3 PM, it will be 11 PM before they're switched back on and I start feeling tired again. So alcohol, on the other hand, is a little bit different. It depends on the person. It can keep people awake, but it also can make people tired. It really depends on what they're doing. But what you find is the metabolism of alcohol, so the removal of alcohol from the blood system once you're drinking it, impairs, because it's happening in the gut, the liver, the gut, the GI sort of areas within the body, you find that metabolism actually interferes with the production of melatonin through the synthesis of tryptophan and serotonin in the gut. So you actually get a poorer quality sleep. So you're not going to get as much REM or deep sleep because your melatonin levels aren't going to be as high. So you'll feel really groggy in the morning and probably have a bit of a headache from the alcohol and lack of sleep.
Hmm. Now, do you have any like simple tips to share with us regarding appropriate light exposure for, well, people of all ages, but anything specific for babies or children?
It would be the same for everyone, you know, whatever age they are. You need to be watching the sunrise in the morning without fail. Like if you're not watching the sunrise for a few minutes in the morning, you're going to have a mismatched circadian rhythm. The first light you should see should be the rising sun, simply put. If you're rising before the sun rises, then you need to be wearing blue light blocking glasses in the morning until the sun has risen. You need to be able to see what your ancestors would have seen. During the day, if you're working inside, you need to be outside getting regular sun breaks. You need to be getting, you know, out at least in the morning once, eat your lunch outside, or, you know, and sorry, getting out in the afternoon as well for a little bit of light, because you need the different light messages from the sun as the day goes by to retrain your circadian rhythm and keep it correct. And, you know, the big thing after sunset is good quality pair of blue light glasses. Like just a good red deep amber lens is what you need, and you need to be wearing that 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed. There's no other way around it unless you want to live in the middle of a field, you know, and not watch TV. You know, you can have red light bulbs in your house, but, you know, your appliances are all going to have blue light, your TV, your phone, things like that. So you've got to be very, very careful that you're not exposing yourselves to a lot of blue light after sunset. And the way to do that is good quality blue light blocking glasses, like none of this clear rubbish that people wear after sunset. It's got to be red or deep amber and block 100% of the light that falls within the blue and green spectrums, 400 to 550 nanometers. And good quality LED light bulbs in your house as well, that are red after sunset.
So this would be like, we're not going to have time to talk about it now, but about your blue blocks glasses is what you're recommending, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not on here to push my product on anyone at all. I just like to sort of educate. But, you know, what you need to do is you need to ensure that if you're going to buy from Blue Blocks, we've got you covered. Our lenses block 100% as they should be, the red lenses. But if you find another company out there that you prefer to buy from, then you need to ask for a spectral report showing that 100% of light is blocked between 400 and 550 nanometers. If they're not showing you that, then or they're saying it's any less than that, then save your money, because they're not going to do anything for you. So you need to just make sure that, you know, you're asking those questions to yourselves. And if you happen to want to buy from Blue Blocks, then, you know, our Sleep Plus lenses do exactly what I'm describing and are full exactly in line with the academic literature.
Hmm. Now, I will put links in the show notes to the Blue Blocks website and Instagram page. Is there anywhere else you recommend sending listeners who would like to find out more about what we've talked about today or to get in contact with you?
Yeah, really sign up to the mailing list on the website. So blublox.com, blueblocks.com, because we release a newsletter once a week that has a YouTube video from me on it, which is normally 4 to 10 minutes in length, and also a blog article on a subject relating to light. And our website has loads of like archive blogs and lots of information as well, should people want to learn a little bit more on light in there as well. And they can always, you know, drop our customer service team an email as well, asking questions about light, and they're always happy to help.
Great. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today and share this knowledge. Blue light is a pet topic of mine, so I really appreciate this.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you today.
So my final question for you to end on is, if the entire world's knowledge was lost and you could only leave one sentence for future generations, what would it be?
Watch the sunrise.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.